What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Sweden and Finland apply to join NATO in a historic day for the alliance.
There's no doubt that Finland and Sweden joining NATO is a nightmare for Vladimir Putin. He wanted to weaken and divide the NATO alliance, and what's happening now is the exact opposite of that.
Plus, volatility spreads to currency markets, and what primary elections across the U.S. yesterday signal about the future of the Republican and Democratic parties. It's Wednesday, May 18th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Finland and Sweden have formally applied for NATO membership today, a move that, if approved, would fundamentally transform the security landscape of Northern Europe and give the alliance a valuable edge against Russia following Moscow's invasion of Ukraine. That move by Finland and Sweden represents a break with decades of defense doctrine that saw them balance political and security partnerships with other Western nations while staying out of formal military alliances. At a ceremony in Brussels this morning, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg described the occasion as a good day at a critical moment.
Every nation has the right to choose its own path. You have both made your choice after thorough democratic processes. And I warmly welcome the requests by Finland and Sweden to join NATO. You are our closest partners, and your membership in NATO would increase our shared security.
We'll have a lot more on Russia's reaction to today's news and whether Sweden and Finland could be vulnerable in the period before they formally join the alliance later in the show. In the U.S., votes are still being tallied in a number of key primary races after five states held primary elections yesterday. In Pennsylvania, there was no resolution Tuesday night in the day's marquee race, a Republican nomination for an open U.S. Senate seat, pitting former President Donald Trump's endorsed candidate, celebrity doctor Mehmet Oz, and former hedge fund chief David McCormick. Journal Politics reporter Eliza Collins says that while a handful of races didn't swing in Trump's favor, including in North Carolina, where Trump-backed Representative Madison Cawthorn was defeated, Trump's influence remains strong.
Former President Donald Trump is the leader of the party. I think there's no question about that. His endorsements don't always hold, but the candidates in these races, for the most part, are aligning themselves very closely with him.
Collins says Democrats in Pennsylvania also signaled via the Senate primary where their party could be headed as they propelled Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman, a prominent liberal, to victory over Representative Connor Lamb.
Lamb was a centrist type Democrat, and Democrats said that they wanted to follow Lamb's lead on how to win elections. We're also still waiting for results in Oregon's 5th congressional district, where another centrist congressman appears to be in trouble. I think from those two major races, there is energy with progressives in these primaries.
A new report by the U.S. Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction, a government watchdog, has found that U.S.-trained Afghan security forces were shocked by America's abrupt withdrawal last year and were ill-equipped to defend the country against the Taliban. It is the first published report to interview Afghan forces since the U.S. war ended on August 30th. The report concluded that the U.S.'s 20-year, $90 billion training mission had created a local security force that could not operate on its own, but rather depended on the U.S. to pay troop salaries, on contractors to maintain their equipment, and on U.S. and allied airstrikes to combat the Taliban. The Pentagon Tuesday rejected suggestions that the U.S. mission in Afghanistan had failed. And airline prices continue to climb and could do so for years to come, according to Frontier Airlines CEO Barry Biffle. Speaking at the WSJ Future of Everything Festival, Biffle said the combination of increased demand, lower aircraft capacity, and pilot shortages across the globe means the supply and demand imbalance could take years to fix.
We're only in the kind of one of the first few innings of this revenue recovery, so we'll see what happens. But the truth is their input costs are going up. And so, you know, unless, you know, the biggest one being energy, unless that subsides, I can't see why fares would go down.
We have spoken a lot on the program in recent weeks about general market volatility, but now volatility has spread to the usually calm universe of foreign exchange trading, as a number of major currencies have posted substantial gains and losses in recent months. WSJ Financial Markets reporter Julia Ambra-Verlaine has the latest on what is going on in the world of FX, and she joins us now with more. Hi, Julia.
Hello. How are you, Luke?
I'm doing terrific, thanks. So how much currency volatility are we actually talking about here, and what accounts for it?
We're talking about levels of vol that have nearly doubled over the past 6 months, and that is particularly within the euro, the pound, and a lot of this has to do with just very large double-digit percentage moves that we have not seen in decades in FX, actually. So when a currency moves quickly, the volatility gauge that traders at desks at banks use spikes and goes up.
And Julia, which countries seem to be mainly affected by this volatility, or is it sort of a global trend, which is, I guess, why we're talking about it here?
It's a bit of a global trend. I mean, there are some currencies that move more than others. So like I said, the euro is actually probably the most affected, and that's because they had this shock in Europe with the crisis unfolding with Ukraine and Russia. They're dealing with an energy issue. They have inflation. So Europe has its own geopolitical issues that are playing into this. But you've seen it as well in the Japanese yen. And a lot of that has to do just because the dollar's moved so quickly within a short amount of time, and it's gone up a lot year to date. So that means all these other currencies are reacting to the dollar move. And so they're moving. And so you have vols have jumped pretty much across the board. Sterling as well, because the Bank of England is moving at a different rate than the Fed. Swiss franc, not so much. That's actually a bit muted, which is a bit strange and different. And then you also have volatility jumping in pairs that are in Eastern Europe and Latin America. So it's a global phenomenon, just at different levels, I'd say.
And finally, what does a volatile foreign exchange market mean for investors, both investors who invest in currencies, but also just for everyone else?
Well, volatility is usually a good thing for traders and asset managers. It gives them an opportunity to make money. It's another tool in their toolkit. So if you are a macro hedge fund taking a view, all of a sudden you can buy and sell a currency and reap pretty nice returns. And then also if you're investing in stocks, it might kind of change your view on certain companies that have exposure to currency swings and a stronger dollar. And that might mean weaker earnings for certain companies. So we usually tend to see a weaker stock market in the face of a stronger dollar. That's a historic trend. So it does have ramifications for both macro investors and stock pickers.
That was WSJ Financial Markets reporter Julia Ambra-Verlaine. Julia, thank you for the update.
You're welcome.
Coming up, we'll speak to journal correspondent Sunit Rasmussen about today's historic decision by Sweden and Finland to apply for NATO membership. We'll have that story after the break.
You're a growing business and you can't afford to slow down. If anything, you could probably use a few more hours in the day. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Sweden and Finland formally applied to join the NATO alliance today, an announcement that signals a historic shift in European security. WSJ correspondent Sunit Rasmussen has been following Finland and Sweden's bids to join NATO, and he joins us now with the latest. Hi, Sunit.
Hi, Luke.
Could you just start by telling us a little bit about the significance of Finland and Sweden's applications to join NATO today?
This is a major deal. Finland and Sweden have been non-aligned and neutral for most of the past many decades. For Sweden, it's been 200 years of non-alignment. Finland has been militarily non-aligned since the Second World War. So for those two countries, forging a formal military alliance is a big deal. But for NATO, this has major repercussions as well. Getting Finland and Sweden into the alliance allows NATO to look at the Baltic and Nordic region, which also encompasses Denmark and Norway, Iceland, and then the Baltic countries, as one coherent area, not just in terms of defending against Russian aggression, but also for long-term planning. And that's something that Finland and Sweden haven't been part of yet. And that's important, for example, because Finland has an 830-mile border with Russia. So when Finland becomes member of NATO, which it is expected to become, NATO's border with Russia will double with the stroke of a pen. And that's obviously a big deal. In the case of a war, Russia would also seek to presumably get through Sweden and Finland to get its submarines into the North Atlantic. And having Finland and Sweden as part of NATO's operation planning, that will also help sort of prevent that. So this is also very helpful for NATO. And then we should also add that both Finland and Sweden are highly militarized countries, particularly Finland, which has almost 1 million reservists, including its standing army of 280,000 that it can mobilize relatively quickly in case of a war. So both countries are assets to NATO as well.
What reactions, if any, have we seen from Russia regarding today's news or just for the sort of steps that have been taken in recent days towards what we actually saw formally occur today?
So Russia has been sending quite mixed signals on this. There's no doubt that Finland and Sweden joining NATO is a nightmare for Vladimir Putin. He wanted to weaken and divide the NATO alliance. And what's happening now is the exact opposite of that. And in recent weeks, Russia has threatened Finland and Sweden with consequences. Hasn't elaborated on those consequences, but it said that there would be consequences if they were to join NATO. Most recently, though, this week, Vladimir Putin himself said that Finland and Sweden joining NATO is not a security threat to Russia, and Russia will only respond if it changes the military architecture in the north. So meaning NATO bases, NATO troops, NATO weapons on Finnish or Swedish soil. That would provoke a Russian reaction, he says. So it's been a little bit mixed because Russia has certainly sounded more aggressive just in recent weeks.
And soon Finland and Sweden will have to go through several months of waiting at least before they are actually covered by NATO's security blanket. Does that leave them vulnerable to possible Russian actions during that period?
Yeah, that's right. In Finland and Sweden, they call this the gray period, the period from today, basically, when they formally put in an application for NATO membership until the day where they are approved as members and then formally encompassed by Article 5, which is the article in NATO's chapter that guarantees this common security blanket for all its members. And Finland and Sweden will not be covered by that until the day when they are accepted as members. And that's true that this does make them more vulnerable to Russian retaliation. I don't think anyone is actually expecting Russia to pose a military threat to Finland and Sweden, but Russia can do other things. Cyber threats, it can ramp up disinformation campaigns, it can try to sow discord among Finnish and Swedish population and then Russian minorities in those countries. The UK has given Finland and Sweden increased security guarantees and said that if they come under threat, the UK will of course help them. The Finnish president yesterday in a press conference with the Swedish prime minister said that he, since March, has been talking to President Biden about security guarantees. And Biden, of course, has been supportive, but can't guarantee anything that would require congressional approval. So that would, for example, include war in case Russia invaded Finland. But this is something that the NATO alliance is very much aware of and has guaranteed to the extent that they can that they will help Finland and Sweden. But like I said, no one is expecting outright military action from Moscow.
And finally, Suna, what is the timeline going forward from here? Sweden and Finland, I understand, will need unanimous support from NATO members in order to join the alliance, but Turkey has voiced some opposition to their membership.
Yeah, the next steps are all 30 states must approve the Finnish and Swedish applications. And as you mentioned, Turkey has objected to this. Interestingly, the Finnish president also yesterday said that as late as April, President Erdogan of Turkey told him personally that he had no objections to a Finnish NATO membership, but that apparently has changed. So Turkey is accusing Finland and Sweden of housing terrorist groups, and they're referring to, for example, Turkish opposition groups that are based in Finland and Sweden and other countries as well. And that's the reason that President Erdogan has given for his current objections. But both in Finland, Sweden, and also in the US, officials say that they are optimistic that they can sway Turkey on this issue. Beyond Turkey, we haven't really seen any objections to a Finnish and Swedish membership. So at this point, it's just Turkey that's throwing in obstacles.
That was Wall Street Journal correspondent Sune Rasmussen. Sune, thank you so much for joining us on such a historic day.
Yeah, you're welcome, Luke. Good to speak with you.
And that is What's News for Wednesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.